Thank you for stopping by Living Waters World Online, the place where the river of God flows. Pastors Lawrence and Kimberly Richardson invite you on a journey to change the church, challenge the colleges, and charge into the community. The following message is from the series, A Home Like This One.
It is amazing that immediately after giving humankind an atmosphere to live in, that God would walk in the cool of the day. Immediately after that, here comes Satan. Somebody sent me real loud, here comes Satan. Generally, after every major accomplishment in our lives, we need to look for Satan. You didn't hear what I said. Normally, whenever we accomplish something great, something substantial, some place that we've been trying to get to, immediately after that, here comes Satan. Somebody say me real loud, here comes Satan. All right, here comes Satan. So what is the aftermath of grasping, disarming the powers and authorities of darkness, and a home like this one? What is the aftermath? What is that? Aftermath is defined as something that results or follows an event. It's normally speaking of something that follows something of a disastrous nature or an unfortunate nature. Better definition is a consequence, the after effects of a significant event. One definition says the aftermath is the new growth that happens after a proper mowing. And that's the one I want to sort of kind of camp out on. How shall we grow now that we understand that there are powers and authorities of darkness? How shall we now be able to stand having the information that we have about the ones that clinch us and the ones that mislead us and the one that benefits off of us? Now that we understand that there are powers of and authorities of darkness, what we going to do now? Ask your neighbor, say, neighbor, what you going to do now? It's one thing to know about something. It's something totally else to act on the knowledge that you now have. Ask your neighbor one more time, say, what you going to do now? It is the growth after a proper mowing. The aftermath is best seen when we see a hurricane and then what happens after the hurricane has initial landfall. There should be an aftermath after every time we have an encounter with God. You didn't hear what I said. There should be an aftermath after every encounter with God. Something ought to have changed and something now ought to grow. You now ought to have the ability to stand. You need to get that deep in with your belly, because there is called the parable of the sower. After every encounter with God, there ought to be an aftermath. After every encounter with God, there ought to be an aftermath. You ought to now go back to work and they ought to ask what happened to you. Your family, now that you ain't seen them in years, and now you done got in a good church, and now you're reading your Bible, now you got a prayer life, your family ought to ask what's going on with you. Shame on us if can't no one see we encounter God. Huh, God. You got me right where I need to be, son. You miss what I said. Shame on us if no one can tell we encountered God. You didn't hear me. Or you're not responding like I thought you would respond. Shame on us if we come out of our prayer closet and we still struggling with cussing folks out. Shame on us if we come out of a worship encounter and we still don't like Betsy because she Betsy. There ought to be an aftermath. Ephesians says it very clearly. Ephesians chapter number 4, it says, till we come into the unity of faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, unto that perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Listen to what it says, that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro, but carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and the cunning craftiness whereby they lie wait to deceive, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up in him in all things. Every encounter with God ought to cause us to grow up. I'm talking about what happened the last 45 minutes when Elder JD kept singing Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. We ought to come out of that changed. In fact, under the Old Testament experience, which was not as good as the covenant that we have in the New Testament experience, it says that Saul went among the prophets and he was turned into another man. Old Testament. How much more now that we're under the New Testament with a new covenant with better promises and the Holy Ghost now dwelling in us. This is why the enemy tries to keep us from encountering God. You missed it. This is why the enemy tries to keep us from encountering God. He knows one encounter can change everything. And I feel like preaching right there. You didn't hear what I said. I don't care what your home is like right now. One encounter with God can change everything. Do me a favor, tell your neighbor, say, neighbor, don't keep wasting encounters. Oh, God. Does anybody know one encounter with God can change everything? The problem is, I don't know if we value encounters. Now, we value the ball game, and we value the new car that we drive, and we value when we get a new house. We value a lot of things that are temporal. And the house is great until the roof get a hole in it and now we got to fix the house. But I don't know how much we value things that are eternal, lasting, like prayer. You ain't saying that, so I know they need to preach. Like worship, like reading our word, like being the Holy Ghost being stirred up. I don't know how much we value that. That's why you're looking at me in that tone. I told you, this is what the American dream does to us. It makes us put a high value on things that are temporal and make us put a low value on things that are eternal. What you praying about? What you going to church for? Why you giving your money? See, what they're trying to tell you is, don't do that. Do the things that have no eternal value. Give you $300 to go to the basketball. I took my children and my wife to a professional basketball game the other day, and y'all have no idea how much money I had to spend. And I took her mama too. Y'all have no idea how much money I spent. It was on my dime. Yes, it was. Sit down, Noah. Be quiet. Was that Noah? But guess what, guys? And it was fun. We had a great time. It was family bonding, all of that. But guess what? My youngest son tricked my wife in to go look for some cards in a store. So they missed the whole first half. Down looking for something in the store. But guess what? After the fourth quarter, and after the music concert, they had a music concert afterward. But after all of that was over, guess what? It was over. All we had was sweet memories. And all I had was counting my pennies that was gone. Y'all notice who I looked at when I said that. Man, what could I have done with that? Money. And I'm not devaluing the family time and all of that. But what I am saying is I spent a whole lot of money for us to enjoy ourselves that was over after about 3 hours. It was over, gone. That's what the world has convinced us, put value there. No value in, now lock your family in the house and y'all pray 3 hours together. And we wonder why we are where we are as a culture. Stay with me. I said Tuesday night a statement that I'm going to keep making. We are moving in a circular motion, moving forward on our way back to the garden. We are moving in a circular motion, moving forward on our way back to the garden. What does that mean? Read Genesis 1 and 2 and you quickly discover it all began in a garden. Read Revelations 21, 22. Guess where all of this is going to end? In a garden. We're on our way back to living with God forever in a garden. And the last few series that I've done, specifically the last two, God has been trying to answer some basic questions for us. I said, God, do I have to rehearse it one more time? I thought I did that last week. God said, no, they need to hear it again. God is now with the teaching about the powers of darkness and teaching about Genesis 1 and 2. He's answering for us, why are we here? Those of you that parent children, one of the quickest things that you should teach them, why they are here. It's a strong indictment when we're 30 and we don't know why we're here. That normally leads to wondering. God is now answering questions like, how did we get here? He's answering questions, what is the purpose of humanity's existence? Here's a big one. He's answering the question, where are we going? We are moving in a circular motion, moving forward on our way back to the garden. What does this mean? He's trying to tell us, life ain't about that, it's about this. That really ain't that important. This is important. It ain't your temporal state. It's where you're going to spend eternity. I'm going to throw something out there that I know probably y'all don't want to really face. But what if the funeral that I attended yesterday was your funeral? What would be your eternal state? We don't like asking these kind of questions, Reverend Ernest. But David says there's only one step between me and that state. Why are you going here? Why are you going here? I think sometimes we're moving a little bit too fast. And we need to slow down and ask, if I die, will I live again? And if I live again, because we all gonna live again, where are we going to live? Where are we going? What does these end times mean? What is the ending of days? What does it mean that there's a closing to the dispensation of grace? How are all these things are going to be? What does collusion with Russia and our president's seeming schizophrenic, what does the nations of the world, what does all this go together with disarming the powers and authority and a home like this? How do we put all of this stuff together for it means something to me? Well, if we're listening, we're paying attention, I need to add, if we're coming to Bible study, where we're finding out that God's moving us from guilt to glory, we'd find out what all of this stuff means. Hear me, hear me. God does not intend for us to be confused. But if we don't have adequate teachers and in the proper places where we're supposed to be taught, we will look at this world and we will be confused like the world. come on, Issachar, you're not supposed to be confused. Do me a favor, look at somebody and say, come on, Issachar, you ought not be confused. You have understanding of the times. You ought to be able to explain world events. You ought to be able to explain, why do I need to understand how to disarm powers and authorities of darkness? Come on, you can look at the state of marriage in our country, over 55% divorce rate. We ought to now be able to explain why I need to look at Genesis 1 and 2 again. Somebody said, real loud, get back to the pattern. We got to get back to the pattern. What's wrong with marriage? I finally got the answers. What's wrong with America in America is we got to get back to the pattern. We don't even know if it's okay for men to marry men. We don't even know anymore. We don't have no answers. I can tell you clearly why men should not marry men. Easily. Why women shouldn't marry women. But the average Christian now has no answer. Don't go there with me. And the average Christian is starting to be more borderline than anything. If not confused about homo, metro, or promosexual. The average Christian is now confused. We're borderline and we don't have definitive answers. And all we got to do is point back to the garden. I've told people for years, marriage is not for sinners. So I ain't even got to get to debate, can a man marry a man? Marriage is not for sinners. Come on, look at your neighbor and say, neighbor, marriage ain't for sinners. I real go a little deeper, marriage ain't for most Christians. You can't even fellowship with somebody. How are you going to be married to somebody? You can't be a friend. If you can't be a friend, how are you going to be married to somebody? We try to get married. Most Christians get married so they won't be in sin. Oh, man. Y'all better go ahead and stop playing with me. I'm telling y'all what I know to be true. I've been in church close to 60 years. We ought to now have definitive answers. We ought to have definitive answers about these kind of things. And I believe that's why God is getting us back to simple truths. Like what we're doing in Bible studies, we're walking verse by verse through Romans. Romans 1 talks about the guilt of all humanity, both Jew and Gentile. We looked at chapter 5 of the last couple of weeks, that now that we are justified, we're not justified now by our own works, we're justified by the works, finished works of Christ. My salvation is not hinged upon no works of Pastor Lawrence, no works of Reverend Anthony, no works of Pastor Kimberly. My salvation is predicated on the finished works of Christ. And so now when people talk about that pastor failed and this minister did that and the church all got all sinners, well, my salvation ain't based on none of that. My salvation is based on Christ. So when you get an indictment against my Christ, I might put this church thing down. Thank you, Edward. You got me right where I need to be, son. We must wisely listen now that we'll understand these times and why we're talking about now the ending of dispensation of grace. We listen wisely so we can understand where the Lord is sending us. We pay attention so we'll understand who God is placing around us. I can't say this loud enough. We as the church must now be able to properly discern the seasons and the times. We, the church, must now be able to properly discern the seasons and the times. Because when we finish chapter 2, we move into Genesis chapter number 3. And the first thing that we see when we move into Genesis chapter 3, we see the manifestation of Satan. When we move out of Genesis chapter number 3, chapter 2, where God has given us a home that we want, we move into chapter 3, and the first thing that we run into is Satan. Joshua tells us that very clearly. Joshua 24 tells us very clearly, when God has finished making us a home and we run into Satan, Joshua 24 gives us a clear answer to when we run into Satan. Joshua 24, verse 14 and 15, it says, "Now for fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt. Serve ye the Lord." What do I do when I run into Satan? Serve ye the Lord. "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, then choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served on this side or on the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whom land you dwell. But for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." When God finished making whatever the home that he's making for us and we run into Satan, the first declaration that we ought to make when he's standing at the door, when he's trying to get in the window, "For me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." Somebody say it loud with me. Say, "For me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." You will be amazed what will flee if you would open up your mouth and make a declarative statement. Satan standing at your door, you better let him know whose house this is. Don't let him come in and look around without knowing this is the Lord's house and the Lord and I dwell here. And if you stay here too long, you're going to get skin up. "For me and my house," whenever you run into Satan, you got to make a declaration. Sometimes Satan is in people and you got to make a declaration to the people that he in. "Me, my house going to serve the Lord." I wish I wasn't preaching in this Baptist church this morning. I'd get a few more amen. Sometimes you got to let people know and atmospheres know, "Me and my house, we going to serve the Lord." I've never ran into a moment like this that I don't know who's on the Lord's side anymore. "I can't tell by your songs. I'm nearly hating some of the Christian radio stations now because I don't know what kind of music that is. Mention Jesus every now and then if it's a gospel song. I don't need to come on in no room. That's Three's Company junk. Come on, knock on the door. That's what it is. I know it's something crazy." First thing that when we meet Satan in Genesis chapter 3:1, we jump over to Joshua chapter 24 and we say, as Joshua says, "For me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." Somebody say that to me. Say, "Me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." Somebody need a little practice. Come on, say it again. Say, "For me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." I need the young folks to say it a little louder. If you're under 30, say it a little louder. Say, "For me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." So when they ask you, "Do you want to go to that party?" "Me and my house." Y'all getting quiet on me. Y'all backing out on me. You better hear me, young folks. Y'all ain't being invited to parties like we was invited to parties. We was invited to parties and we knew we were going home because it was just a little birthday with a little birthday cake and a little whistleblowers. That's all we had at our parties. And grandma was standing right there with auntie and everybody was at the party that kept us. See, y'all don't understand. We got invited to a different kind of party. We knew we were going home 7:00. Party over. Y'all getting invited to stuff that don't start to after 12. Y'all better come on. Y'all might act like y'all don't think. I know. I told you I did a study on some stuff. Y'all getting invited to stuff that you think is one thing and it's totally something different in a hotel. Young folks, y'all better please hear me. You better learn to say, "For me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." Y'all better please hear me. Young folks are going to parties and they ain't never coming home. Y'all better hear me. "For me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." I promise you. This is the aftermath. I'm going to get there. Why is this so important when Satan appears in our house? to be able to say for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. Our choices determine the level of effect that the subtle one has in our house. Our choices determine the level of effect that the subtle one has in our homes. Y'all, please come a little closer to me. When you make God choices, there's some stuff Satan just can't do. Thank you. You're witnessing really well. You're gonna make me preach along. Guys, can y'all please listen to me? Some stuff in our homes, we invited it there by our choices. Some of y'all ain't got no business watching Power. You can't handle it. Some of y'all ain't got no business watching that. Some of y'all ain't got no business watching this. And some of y'all ain't got no business to listen to that kind of music. Some of y'all, you can't invite the devil up in here and then talk about what you're doing here. You invited him. Go watch all them scary movies and then wonder why you can't sleep at night. That don't make sense. You invited fear into your house. Fear is going to dwell there. Our choices determine the effect that the subtle one has in our lives. You play with the devil, you're going to feel some fire. You're going to know hell's hot. Y'all don't know nothing to me. I'm going to preach anyway. You wonder why your flesh burning. You can't look at that stuff. You young, single. You don't lay beside nobody. Well, you're not supposed to lay by nobody. Can a man take fire into his bosom and not be burned? I'm almost there. Please begin to teach our children. Their choices determine the level of effect that Satan has in their homes.
We hope you've enjoyed this message from Living Waters World Online. If you were blessed by this message, or know someone who will be blessed by this message, please click the link below for more information on how to receive the full-length copy. We hope you are encouraged, and please remember, this is the place where the river of God flows.